Hi, this is What You Say in English, Season 3, Episode 26.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Episode 26. Of What You Say in English, the podcast in which I listen to you and give you my professional feedback. Today I'll be discussing a crucial topic, and it's a question that I get asked all the time, and especially for anyone looking to study, work, or immigrate to an English-speaking country, and it's English proficiency exams. When I say proficiency, remember that I'm not talking about the C2 proficiency test. I'm talking about the level of proficiency, and all of these exams are called proficiency exams because they test how much knowledge you have in the language. These exams play a significant role in determining your eligibility for various opportunities as they assess your ability to communicate effectively in English. My goal in this episode is to help you choose the best exam for your needs, taking into consideration factors such as your purpose for taking the exam, the format of the test, availability, recognition, and cost. I will be discussing some of the most common English proficiency exams, including the International English Language Testing System, IELTS. You know, I've been speaking for the longest time about this exam. The Test of English as a Foreign Language, the TOEFL. I have spoken about it, but not too much. The Cambridge English exams and how different they are because they're English qualifications. I will explain later what a qualification is, you know, and they include the first, the advanced and proficiency, but they also include other exams, for example, the young learners, which is for children, basically, and the business, which is the BEC exams. And they only come for three levels, which is the B1, B2, and C1. That's it. Then I also include the Pearson Test of English Academic, the PTE Academic, the Duolingo English Test, and the Language Cert International ESOL. These last two exams apparently have had a lot of mishaps, and they're probably not really that good when you come to really analyze what they offer. But anyway, I will tell you all about it in today's episode. By the end of this, you should have a better understanding of each exam and be better equipped to make an informed decision about which one to choose. So let's dive right in and explore the world of English proficiency exams. I would like to start with the factors to consider when choosing an exam, and to study the purpose. Why are you taking the exam? I think the first reason, the first factor that you should consider is the purpose of taking the exam. It's, for many, the primary goal is to study abroad at an English-speaking university or institution. For many, the primary goal is to study abroad at an English-speaking university or institution. Different universities have different language proficiency requirements, so it's essential to research your target schools and their specific requirements. Most universities accept the IELTS or TOEFL as the standard for language proficiency. However, some institutions may also accept other exams like the PTE Academic, Cambridge English exams, even the Duolingo English test, or the Language Cert International ESOL. You'll have to check out. And of course, when that is not a problem, let's say that you have a list of exams, then you have to get on with other types of possible advantages that you might get depending on the exam. Another reason is immigration. If you're planning to immigrate to an English-speaking country, I know that Canada and Australia have always, like for the longest time, they have plans for letting people move into their countries, especially to fill up positions that, depending on the census that they do a year, for example, they have the numbers dwindling, dropping. And then they would encourage people to take part in these programs. And one of the requirement is to have some level of English. Each country has its own preferred or accepted exams, so it's crucial to research the requirements for your target country. For example, as I said, Australia and Canada usually accept IELTS and TOEFL, I think, for immigration purposes, even though TOEFL is more academic, while the UK accepts IELTS and other exams depending on the visa type. So you have to ask and you have to make sure. I can't give you the complete list here because there are so many purposes and so many situations and scenarios in which you might take one exam or the other, but you have to make sure that which exams are accepted. Another reason is for professional development. Some individuals take English proficiency exams for professional development or to improve their career prospects. In such cases, it's essential to understand which exams are widely recognized by employers in your industry. For instance, the TOEIC, which is the Test of English for International Communication, is specifically designed for the workplace. It's often accepted by multinational companies. Of course, the TOEIC belongs to the same group of exams as the TOEFL, and it's ETS, Educational Testing Service, which is located in the US. It's an American company. So the TOEIC is the equivalent, you might say, to the BEC exams for Cambridge. Another thing you need to consider is the test format. Now, when it comes to choosing the format that you can take the exam, we have basically two types. We have the paper-based and the computer-based. The format of the test is another important consideration. Some exams like the IELTS and TOEFL are available in both paper-based and computer-based formats. The choice between the two will depend on your preference and comfort level, of course. Computer-based exams usually offer quicker results and are more flexible in scheduling, while paper-based exams may be more accessible in certain locations. Remember that it's all about technology. It's crucial to research the available formats for your chosen exam and decide which one suits you best. And I know that a lot of people might feel scared about the computer-based exams, basically because they don't feel like they have control over the exam. Sometimes, and I can understand this, sometimes you have the paper in front of you and you can do pretty much whatever you want with that paper. You can underline, you can make annotations, but believe it or not, the computer-based versions will let you do all of that. And the advantage, for example, it might be that during the listening, you will be wearing headphones. And this is something that may not be available in other formats of the exam. For example, in paper-based exams, sometimes you take with the rest of the candidates in one room and there's a gigantic speaker. And then basically, depending on your position in the room, you might probably have a better listening experience than another student. So you have to consider the computer-based version. When it comes to Cambridge, because I have more experience with Cambridge exams, when you take the paper-based exam, it takes usually around 2 months, I would say 2 months, the least, to get the results. In the case of the computer-based versions, it's only 2 weeks. So it's that short. And the experience is not really that different. Of course, reading off the screen might be a problem for you, and it's only to practice. But nowadays, for example, in my case, I would not even consider taking a paper exam. I feel very comfortable. And when it comes to writing, it's even better because when it comes to writing, you don't really have to write a draft. You can draft it at the same time you're writing because you can edit it very quickly. You can select sections of the text and you can copy, paste, or cut basic editing tools. You cannot use bold or cursive. It depends on the exam. I would say that the Cambridge exam, they have the basic and they have a word count. I know that a lot of people worry about how many words they write. And at least I know in the Cambridge exams, you have a word counter at the bottom of the page. So you know all the time. You always know how many words you've written. Consider it. There are videos available on YouTube, actually, many, for example, the TOEFL exam, they have very clear videos that they have produced in which they explain step by step how you take the computer-based version of the exam. Another thing is exam sections. How many sections do they have? Normally, it would go along the way of the skills in English, the listening, reading, writing, and speaking. Different exams assess your English language skills through various sections, such as I said, listening, reading, writing, and speaking. It's important to familiarize yourself with the structure of each exam to understand what to expect and identify areas where you may need extra preparation. For example, the IELTS, TOEFL, and the PTE Academic all have separate listening, reading, writing, and speaking sections, while the Cambridge English exams combine reading and writing in one section. That's for the lower levels. For example, when you take the B1, and I would say the B1, A2 and B1, they usually combine the reading and writing in the same section. When you move on to the first certificate of English, that's B2, C1 and C2, then you get them separately. But of course, you have the dreaded use of English section, which is more grammatical, which is not present in other exams like the IELTS. Taking the IELTS is just 4 papers, basically, and you take them in this order: listening, reading, writing, and then finally the speaking. So you have to consider that, because if you're not very good at grammar, you can express yourself in English, but you're not very good at grammar, maybe the Cambridge exams are not for you, and you have to take the IELTS exam in this case, for example, because grammar is covered in the speaking and the writing. The Duolingo English test, on the other hand, includes a unique adaptive test format that adjusts the difficulty level based on your performance. So that means that as you're answering questions, and the questions do not pose really a problem because you can handle them, the questions become increasingly more difficult. This is what we call adaptive, and it's been used not only by the Duolingo English test, but it's also used by the APTIS, for example. This is the British Council exam, and it's also adaptive. It's basically an artificial intelligence that will see, oh, this is too easy for you, let me throw a more difficult question. Then if you cannot answer it, maybe they will probe with another one at the same level before moving up another level. This is great. I think it's very clever using technology to adapt the test to the students' needs. And actually, the exam can actually end before, once the test reaches a maximum. For example, they know, oh no, I already know what level you have. So this is what we call it. And I think it's a great piece of technology available for exam preparation. But there are some things that I don't like, especially about the DET, the Duolingo English test. The test availability is another consideration. Where the test centers and locations are, it is another crucial factor to consider when choosing an English proficiency exam. It is essential to ensure that your chosen exam is accessible in your location or city nearby. Recently, a lot of people in Russia have had to take, for example, the Cambridge exams in other surrounding countries, because I have actually prepared people that have had to take the exam someplace else because Cambridge have decided to stop all examinations in Russia. Some exams like the IELTS and TOEFL have a widespread test center networks, making them more accessible in various countries. On the other hand, exams like the PTE Academic or, as I said, the Cambridge exams may have limited centers in some regions. Sometimes test organizations like a board of examiners and exam boards, in this case, they come to agreements with many different institutions in some countries, providing more availability. But as the exam becomes more famous and more accepted worldwide, of course, there will be more exam centers. Think about also the frequency of the exams, how frequent, how often they're offered. Some exams are offered more frequently than others, obviously, which could affect your test preparation timeline and schedule. For example, the IELTS and the TOEFL exams are typically available several times a month, whereas the Cambridge exams are offered less frequently, often only a few times a year. I remember that around 10 years ago, even, I would say 10, 15 years ago, the proficiency was offered only twice a year. One exam around June, July, and another exam in December. And that was it. Nowadays, for example, as the demand has grown, the exam can be taken pretty much every month, at least once every month. And it depends on the exam center as well. But it's important to check the exam schedule for your chosen test, and you have to plan accordingly. Then we come to the test recognition. How accepted? If it's accepted by universities and institutions, and when choosing that exam and the English proficiency exam, it's essential to consider whether your target universities or institutions accept it. As mentioned before, most universities and institutions recognize the IELTS and the TOEFL exams. However, other exams like the PTE Academic, Cambridge exams, this is incredible, but Cambridge exams are not probably that famous in the US. And you might consider, for example, if you're going to the United States of America, you might take another exam. The Duolingo English test has grown a lot, but I will explain later why. And the Language Cert International ESOL are also gaining wider acceptance. It's crucial to research the specific language proficiency requirements for your desired institutions to ensure your chosen exam is accepted. You don't want to take an exam, go through the whole process, and then realize that your exam will not be accepted. Also, if it's for working reasons, you have to make sure that it's recognized by employers. For those taking the English proficiency exam and for professional development or, you know, employment purposes, it's important to choose the test that is widely recognized by employers in your industry. Sometimes you get the pointers from your company. Your company may probably ask you to take a very specific exam, but if you're doing it on your own, like you want to increase your employability because you want to be more attractive or probably land another job that might give you more benefits, definitely you have to consider doing your research. However, other exams like the IELTS and the TOEFL may also be recognized by employers, especially those in the education sector or organizations that require a high level of English proficiency. But remember that these exams, especially the IELTS and the TOEFL, they have a validity of 2 years. So I would say that they're more applicable to universities because you only do the admission once. So you only do that admission once. And of course, an exam that you do within that window, that time period of 2 years, is okay. But if it's only for working reasons, then go for the TOEIC, which is the Test of English for International Communication, or the BEC exams for the Cambridge exams, the BEC, the Business English Certificate. Be sure to research the language requirements of your target employers, of course. And let's consider the cost and budget. How much money? The cost of taking an English proficiency exam can vary significantly depending on the test and the location. When choosing an exam, consider the registration fees as well as additional expenses such as the test preparation materials, courses, and travel costs if the center is not nearby. It's important to factor in these expenses when making your decision and choose an exam that fits within your budget. So, selecting the right English proficiency exam involves careful consideration in various factors, including the purpose of taking the exam, test format, availability, recognition, and cost. By thoroughly researching these factors and understanding your individual needs, you can make an informed decision and choose the exam that best aligns with your goals and preferences. Ultimately, the right exam will not only serve as a testament to your English language skills, but also open doors to new educational, professional, and personal opportunities in English-speaking environments. Now, this section is going to be a little bit extensive because I'm going to go with an overview of the common English proficiency exams. Of course, I cannot cover all of them, but I will cover the most important ones. And I will start with the International English Language Testing System, IELTS. The IELTS is widely recognized as an English proficiency exam, and it's administered by the British Council, the IDP Education in Australia, and Cambridge Assessment English. It is designed to assess the language abilities of non-native English speakers who plan to study, work, or live in an English-speaking country. There are two versions of the IELTS: the IELTS Academic, which is intended for higher education and professional registration, and the IELTS General Training, which is designed for immigration purposes and vocational training. The test format of the IELTS is available in both paper-based and computer-based formats, and it consists of four sections: listening, which is roughly 30 minutes, reading, which is 60 minutes, writing, again, 60 minutes, 1 hour, and speaking, which goes from 11 to 14 minutes. The listening, and by the way, the speaking is a one-to-one session. It's only one examiner and one candidate. The listening and speaking sections are the same for both the academic and general training versions, while the reading and writing sections differ. You have one version for the general training and another version for the academic. Now, what about the pros and cons? As for the pros, it's definitely widely accepted by universities, institutions, and governments worldwide. I haven't heard of any place that don't accept the IELTS. Actually, they're quite big in Asia. I would say that's the biggest exam in Asia. They're offered in both paper-based and computer-based formats, and there are test centers available in numerous countries. Now, about the cons, it can be more expensive than other exams. Results are only valid for 2 years, and I would say that some test takers may find that test format challenging, especially the listening, because in the listening, you only listen to the recording once, as opposed to other exams in which you listen twice. That can be a challenge, and that's something that you need to consider. If you were not concentrated, you might lose one or two answers that in other situations you might be able to answer. Now let's move on to the test of English as a foreign language, or the TOEFL. Now, the TOEFL is another popular English proficiency exam administered by Educational Testing Service, which is ETS. It is designed to measure the language abilities of non-native English speakers who plan to study at English-speaking universities or institutions. The TOEFL IBT, which is the internet-based test, is the most common version of the test, but there's also a paper-based called the PBT, paper-based test. The test format of the TOEFL IBT consists of four sections. There's a reading, which can go from 60 to 80 minutes, listening from 60 to 90 minutes, depending on the case, speaking, which is roughly 20 minutes, and it's recordings. You don't speak to an examiner, so you basically see questions and you listen to things and you have to summarize what you listen, and you have to record in front of the computer. And the writing, which is almost 1 hour, which is around 50 minutes, each section is scored separately, and the total score ranges from 0 points to 120. The TOEFL PBT has a different format with three sections: listening comprehension, structure and written expression, and reading comprehension. Now, it's very important that which version of the exam. I think you can take the paper-based exam, which is roughly the same as the computer-based, or the IBT, which is the internet-based. And this is, you have to be careful. Just because it's done over the internet, it doesn't mean that you can take it from home. They do have a version. I know that during the pandemic, they had a version that you might be able to take from home, but I'm not sure if it's still available. And it's not really a full exam. It's more like an indicator. If you're in a hurry, for example, it's actually cheaper, and you can take it as an indicator of your level. Of course, the institution or the place requiring that exam that you take might probably not accept it because it's just an indicator. I think IELTS also have the IELTS indicator, which was also available during the pandemic when everybody was like pretty much sequestered in their houses. You know, you were not allowed, and many test centers closed for the time being. All the face-to-face exams were not possible, of course. And in this case, you might think about that the internet-based version It's not because you can take it from home. It's because you go to the test center and you do it in a computer. And the computer-based, the thing is that the TOEFL started with the computer-based version of the exam. And it was a CD-ROM that exam centers, because I remember I used to proctor, invigilate these exams, and the CD would arrive with the exams, and you would install it in the computers, and all the information, the data was sent later. But nowadays, for example, that computer-based disappeared, and now you have the internet-based, which is pretty much the same thing. And you take it in a computer. You have to make sure that there's a webcam and everything, that there's a person, a real person invigilating the exam. Also, there's a microphone, headphones, and the whole thing. So internet-based doesn't mean that you can take it from home. Be careful. Now, about the pros and cons of this exam, it's widely accepted by universities and institutions worldwide. It's offered in both internet-based and paper-based formats, and they offered a detailed score report, which can be helpful for test takers to identify areas for improvement. Now, about the cons, it can be, again, more expensive than other options. The results are only valid for 2 years, as I said, with the IELTS, and there's a limited test center availability for the paper-based version, if you want to take the paper-based. But the computer-based, I think it's more available. Of course, it depends on the country. I know that in the Americas, for example, North America, South America, Central America, and the Caribbean, for example, the TOEFL is bigger. There's more availability. You have more test centers. But in Europe, for example, they're not very popular. Actually, ever since I came to live here in Spain, I haven't prepared a lot of people for the TOEFL. I only case the odd student that might arrive at the place where I work and, you know, ask me or ask the academy. They usually choose me because I'm the teacher with more experience with the TOEFL exam. And actually, I just prepared a girl who was going to a university in Japan, and they required the TOEFL exam. So I went through the whole process. I actually had to do a little bit of refresh, take a refresher course, crash course, to see what changes have been introduced in the exam in all the time that I hadn't prepared anybody. Now, in the case of the Cambridge English exams, I'm not going to talk about too much because basically the idea of creating this podcast was to help people preparing for these exams. And I know that I've spoken about them countless of times. Just the basic facts is that the Cambridge exams are a series of proficiency tests developed by Cambridge Assessment English. These exams assessed English language skills at various levels of proficiency based on the Common European Framework of Reference for Languages, the CEFR. The most common exams are they go from A2, the A2 key, the B1 preliminary, the B2 first. They also have a version for schools for the B1 and the B1 and the B2. The preliminary for schools and the first for schools. Then you get to the academic exams, which they have the advanced, the C1 advanced, and the C2 proficiency exam. And this is for adults, basically. Then you have the young learners, and they go to A2, I think. They go to pre-A1 to A2, basically. And then they have the flyers, movers, and starters. And these exams, basically, you don't fail them. The children, they just go through the experience. It's a one-to-one. For example, the speaking exam is one examiner. The speaking exam for the rest of the exams is paired, two candidates and two examiners. It's not like the IELTS in this case. And they used to have lots of exams. And these included exams like the ILEC or the ICFI, which were basically exams for legal English and financial purposes. I know that they had other exams like that. The BULATS, for example, which was a multi-level exam that you would not either pass or fail. You just had a level. It was pretty much like the TOEFL or the IELTS in this case, because depending on the score you got, you would get a level. But these exams were removed, and now they're not offered anymore. I actually remember that I prepared a group of lawyers for the ILEC, and it was the last year that the ILEC was going to be available the following year. I cannot remember for the life of me. I think it was in 2015 or 2016 that the ILEC was removed from the offer by Cambridge University. And again, the test format for the Cambridge exams consists of four sections, reading and use of English combined. And the use of English is like basically grammar. Then the writing, listening, and speaking. The format and difficulty of the test vary depending on the exam level, with the CPE, which is the C2 proficiency, being the most advanced and challenging. Now, about the pros and cons, the pros, yeah, this is something that many people don't get, but certificates are valid for life, basically because they are qualifications. They're not really exams, like multi-level exams. The qualifications you get, they are part of this system that they have in the UK and Ireland, and they go from levels, level one, level two, level three. So you think about it. I mean, it's level one to level three are basically the exams, these exams. I would say that level one would be something like the B2 first, and the level three would be the C2 proficiency. Because after those levels, then you have vocational certificates. For example, things like the CELTA, the Certificate of English Language Teaching to Adults. If you want to become an English teacher and work internationally, you would like to take the CELTA. The CELTA is basically a course, and it's you pass or fail it with a portfolio. Basically, you teach classes, you get observed, and these, for example, in this case, is a level four exam. It's a level five certification. And it's within this framework of qualifications. Then after that, just so you think about it, you have the bachelor's degree. So when you graduate from a university in England or Ireland, your bachelor's degree would be typified at level six. And then after that, you get a level seven, which is a master's degree. So it's good to think about the Cambridge exams as part of that continuum of qualifications. That's why they're valid for life. They never expire. But be careful, because you might get accepted. Of course, it depends on how far ago, how long ago in the past you took the, let's say, the advanced exam. Because if you don't practice it, you get rusty. It's, for example, being a doctor and you've never worked as a doctor. How good can you be nowadays, for example? Of course, you do have the knowledge, you do remember a lot of things, but if you're not constantly practicing, you may forget a lot of the things you learned at the university. The same happens with these certificates. If you take the advanced, for example, and a new place is requiring you to showcase or demonstrate your English skills, you might probably have to provide other kinds of evidence to let the people see that your English is still alive and kicking. This is the pro. It's good. They're valid for life. You never know. Some people, I've seen job advertisements in which they require, okay, so we accept the Cambridge Advanced, but taken within the last 3 years, for example. If you took it years before, then maybe you will have to take it again. I don't know. Or they would not accept it. They will not accept it as a valid qualification. So you have to think about it. And it might be a pro, it might be a con, depending on how you look at it. Another pro is that exams are aligned with the CEFR, making it easy to communicate your language skills to employers and institutions. A C1 is a C1 everywhere, and it's accepted by many universities and institutions worldwide. About the cons, they're offered less frequently than other exams, depending on the place. In Madrid, it's not really that much of a problem. In other capital cities, it's not really much of a problem. There might be a limited test center availability in some regions, but normally in big cities, you can choose centers. Some test takers may find the test format and level-specific nature of the exams quite challenging, because if you take the C1, expect everything to be at that level, pretty much. The following test that I would like to talk about is the Pearson Test of English, Academic, the PTE Academic. And it's a computer-based exam, proficiency exam, designed to assess the language abilities of non-native English speakers who plan to study at English-speaking universities or institutions. It is administered by Pearson and is gaining a wider acceptance among universities and institutions worldwide. The test format of the PTE consists of three main sections: speaking and writing, which is combined. It goes around 77 to 93 minutes. Then the reading, which is roughly between 32 and 41 minutes. And the listening, which is 45 to 57 minutes. The test includes various question types, such as multiple choice, fill in the blanks, the whole jazz, basically, as well as a unique section that involves describing images and summarizing spoken text. Now, about the pros and cons, it's a computer-based format that allows for quick results, often within 48 hours. It uses artificial intelligence for unbiased scoring. This is interesting. And it's accepted by a growing number of universities and institutions worldwide. You probably haven't heard about this exam. Honestly, I've never prepared anyone for this exam. No one has come to me saying, hey, do you offer classes for the PTE? It's the Pearson exam. No, I haven't. And actually, it's very difficult to find material, to be honest. Once I tried to find materials, I contacted Pearson, and they do have it, but it's upon request. About the cons, may be more expensive than other exams. It's limited. I don't know exactly if there are centers available in Madrid, to mention an example. And of some test takers may find the test format and question types challenging. Honestly, I cannot say much about this exam. I don't have a lot of experience with it. I've heard it being mentioned, and every time I go to conventions, teachers' conventions, I always see it advertised, and I see it like it's available. And for the longest time, I think they've been trying to push it into getting institutions to take the proficiency, this Pearson test. But honestly, I haven't seen that they've gained much acceptance. Now, I want to talk about the Duolingo English test, the DET. It's DET, DET, the Duolingo English test. This is funny. The Duolingo English test is relatively new online, and it's an English proficiency exam designed to assess the language skills of non-native English speakers. And it is administered by Duolingo, the app that everybody knows, and it's gaining acceptance among universities and institutions worldwide as a valid indicator of English proficiency. The test format of the Duolingo test is adaptive. I told you that it adapts to the student, and depending on the how easy it is for them to answer, they will throw more difficult questions. The computer-based exam that takes approximately 60 minutes to complete. It includes various question types, such as multiple choice, fill in the blanks. I have to say that many of the exercises are a little strange. They're not really very intuitive. I prepared a couple of people for this exam about, I would say, 2 or 3 months ago. And my experience was like, I didn't know where I was going, to be honest. Of course, I try to apply it as much as possible, and there's very little material to prepare exams. I think that what makes other exams as powerful or as, let's say, useful is the amount of preparation material there is available. Not only the practice exams, but also teaching materials, like ways in which students can be prepared. As a teacher myself, if it wasn't because I have a lot of experience with other exams, I wouldn't be able to figure out how to teach certain exercises. They have these number of exercises, and you have to basically make do with what you have. As I said, they have multiple choice, fill in the blanks. They also have spoken responses that you record. You have a time to record the answers, as well as a unique section that involves describing images and summarizing spoken text. The test focuses on four main language skills: the listening, speaking, reading, and writing. But honestly, I cannot recommend it. I didn't have a very nice experience teaching it. I took the sample test that they have online. They have available, they have a sample test. I found it really strange, especially the part in which you have to select which words. You see a screen, and then you have a number of words, and then you have to click on the ones that you think are real words in English. I thought it was very bewildering. I was shocked. I didn't know how to approach that part. Of course, I knew, but I didn't see the purpose, to be honest. I don't know how that can be mapped out to language proficiency. I don't know. Especially because when we talk about language, we don't see words out of context. We see words within a context. And the way the brain works is I may probably see a word and think about it and know what the meaning is. Even creatively, as a writer, I might probably come up with a new word. And just because I give it a meaning, I can use the context. So looking at a list of words in a given without any context, I didn't like that exercise that much. I'm not really a fan of the Duolingo English test. About the pros and cons, it can be taken from the comfort of your home with a reliable internet connection, but there's a caveat here. You can take it from home, but you have to meet very specific requirements, and it's super easy to be disqualified. Incredibly easy. The customer service is awful because my niece, for example, had to take the Duolingo test. She took it like 2 or 3 times until she got rejected. And finally, she was banned from taking the exam ever for I don't know how long. And it was frustrating for her because she did not cheat. She did the exam the best way she could and she got disqualified because apparently the system determined that she was cheating. They don't use human proctoring, like invigilating. They basically use artificial intelligence for that. And if the computer determines that you're cheating and you get disqualified, they do offer quick results, often within 48 hours. And it's super cheap. It's $50, $49 or $50. I'm not really sure. So I know that sounds very attractive, but it might be a source of nightmares, to be honest. I don't recommend it. Of course, about the cons, there's limited recognition by some universities and institutions. And this is what I was going to tell you. I've been reading lately news about many UK universities rejecting results from the Duolingo test, basically because the people that have been discovered to plagiarize or having some sort of academic misconduct were accepted at many universities using the Duolingo test, meaning that the Duolingo may be giving people with very low English skills to be accepted at universities. And of course, just because they had very low levels, they were more prone to copying or cheating or plagiarizing because their English skills were not up to par. And this is a major difference. When you compare with the IELTS or the Cambridge exams, the level of preparation that you need to have for those exams is considerable. So that kind of integrity that students take when they go to an exam center is, you can see it. If you take it from home, the ways of cheating, there are millions of ways in which you can cheat. So those people are more prone to plagiarize context. These people are more prone to plagiarize content. And of course, these things happen. And I've read recently, actually, if you search on Google, for example, academic misconduct and Duolingo, you will find the pieces of news that I've been telling you about. And this is a reality, people. I'm sorry, but I cannot recommend the Duolingo English test. Now, finally, I would like to talk about the Language Cert International ESOL. And this is a proficiency exam that is also aligned with the Common European Framework of Reference for Languages, which is the CEFR. These exams are designed to assess the language abilities of test takers, basically, to study, work, or live in an English-speaking environment. The format of the exam, the exams are available in both paper-based and computer-based formats. The exams consist of 2 separate sections, written, which includes reading, writing, and listening, and spoken, which focuses on speaking. The test is divided into 6 levels, ranging from A1, beginner. This is good because not many exams offer the A1. I know that the Cambridge, for example, they offer the A2 onwards. So A2, but the language cert they offer from A1 up, of course, to C2. The pros and cons. The pros is that it's aligned with the CEFR and it's easy to identify the skills. It's offered in paper-based and computer-based formats. And as the Cambridge exams, the certificates are valid for life. The cons, limited recognition by some universities and institutions through acceptance is growing, apparently. Some test takers may find the level-specific nature of the exams quite challenging. And another thing, and this is something that I wanted to tell you about this exam, they've had a lot of problems here in Madrid. I've read in the news, I remember, that during the pandemic, right after the pandemic, when schools started to receive students in their classes, in their classrooms, the community of Madrid, they always organize exams, proficiency exams for their students, their bilingual schools, in every year. So there was a year in which none of the exam boards actually offered their services. And the only one that accepted that, the only one that offered their services was Lingua, Language Cert, in this case. And they made a mess. They came late to the exam rooms. A lot of students couldn't take the exams at the same day that they were programmed. Examiners were not prepared. The total experience was disastrous. People complaining. And I've seen a lot of reviews online in which people are complaining about their customer service, wasting time, wasting money. In this case, I don't think they're doing pretty well. I know that in this case, reliability and acceptance by universities is essential. And Language Cert international exams, even though they're increasingly being recognized by universities and institutions worldwide, they're not growing as fast as, at least I haven't seen it in the news as such. And I know that I'm always in contact with these types of news. And as you can see, for example, they're not as widely recognized as more established exams like the IELTS, TOEFL, or Cambridge English exams. It is crucial to do the research. And if their language cert is the right one for you, then go ahead and do it. But do your research. Make sure that you know what the exam is like and all the problems that you might encounter. So to end this section, I know that I've spoken a lot about a lot of exams, and there are several English language proficiency exams that you can choose from, but each with its own unique features, test formats, and pros and cons. When deciding on the best exam for your needs, consider factors such as the purpose, why you're taking the exam, the test format that you prefer, how available it is, how recognized, if it's recognized by your university, the one you want to study, or employers, and also think about your budget, your money. And if you understand these various exams available and their specific characteristics, you can make a more informed decision that will help you achieve your educational and professional and personal goals in English-speaking environments. So in this podcast episode, I have explored the various English proficiency exams available to test takers, including well-established exams like the IELTS, TOEFL, Cambridge exams, and PTE Academic, as well as lesser-known options such as the Duolingo English Test and Language Cert International ESOL. Choosing the right English proficiency exam is crucial for achieving your educational, professional, and personal goals in English-speaking environments. The right exam definitely will not only accurately measure your language skills, but also be recognized and accepted by your target universities, institutions, and employers. As you make your decision, consider factors such as the purpose of taking the exam, your preferred test format, availability, recognition by your target organizations, and your budget. Carefully evaluate each exam's pros and cons, verify their acceptance by your target institutions and employers, and assess the quality and reputation of the exam providers. By doing this, I'm sure that you will be better equipped to choose the exam that best suits your needs and objectives. I hope that this episode has been valuable information, has given you insights and guidance to help you make a better decision about which English proficiency exam is the best fit for you. Remember that with thorough preparation, practice, and a positive mindset, these are critical factors when succeeding in any language proficiency exam. So the best of luck to all you test takers on your journey toward mastering the English language and achieving your goals in the English-speaking environments. Thank you very much for joining me this week. And until next week, bye-bye.